shake off the dust. It's time to leave. I know why you call my name. I know that you'll be true. And I know that we'll raise hell again. Cause I know that I need you. And I know just where we're going.
Welcome to Stage and Studio. I'm James Dixon. On today's show, we discuss Here, written by Obie Award-winning playwright Taylor Mack, directed by Andrew Klaus Vineyard at Defunct Theater. Here is a play about a dysfunctional family, including a mad housewife, a transgender son that spent 3 years in combat in Afghanistan, and a husband who had a stroke that left him nearly speechless. Join us for a discussion about Here at Defunct Theater and their upcoming season with the director Andrew Klaus Vineyard and cast members Jim Vidala and Paige McKinney. Stay with us for Stage and Studio and join the discussion. I'm James Dixon. Joining me in the KBOO studio today are Andrew Klaus Vineyard, Jim Vidala, and Paige McKinney with Here, which is being produced at Defunct Theater. Andrew Klaus Vineyard is the director of this show. Jim Vidala and Paige McKinney are two of four cast members for this production, which kicks off Defunct's 17th season. Welcome to Stage and Studio.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So Here premiered in November 2015 at Playwrights Horizons and made the New York Times Top 10 Best Theater of 2015 list. Andrew, what excites you about producing and directing this play?
I think the play is so rich with so many layers of just content. It's about the American family, so it's like kind of like great kitchens, literally like the kitchen sink drama, but it also deals with queer identity, it deals with domestic violence, it deals with PTSD and how we treat our veterans, it deals with expectations of masculinity and femininity and how suburban America sort of fragments and holds that back. And it's also just about family and about, you know, the blood is thicker than water, and sometimes that's still not enough. And I think that's really interesting to explore.
Right. So what's significant about this play is that there's certain aspects of the story that relates to the playwright's past, correct?
Yeah, that is what I understand. And that's always a terrifying thing, is when you're doing something that does have some autobiographical material in it, you want to try to make as much realism and justice to
right.
that.
Kind of like Tennessee Williams, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what do you know about Taylor Mack? What can you tell us about Taylor Mack?
Taylor Mack is sort of this luminous creature from downtown New York, this amazing performance artist, and is just one of, I think, the smartest, best playwrights we have right now. This is the best script I have read in years, and I find something new in it all the time. I never get tired of it. It's really, really an honor and a privilege, and it was super exciting for us to get to do this show. I mean, it's Yeah, I think it's a play that's going to be done a lot in the future and studied and dissected. I mean, it's so rich.
Yeah, it's pretty new too, right?
It's brand spanking new, yeah.
Nice. So Jim and Paige, could you tell us about your characters?
Yeah, I play Isaac. He is a veteran returning home from the Afghan War, and he was in mortuary affairs, which is they kind of go around and clean up the dead bodies and limbs and, you know, things that happened in war. He goes around and he cleans them up. Yeah, and he's been kicked out of the war for drug use. So he's coming home not with honors.
Right. Yeah. What about yours?
I play the mad housewife, Paige, which is the same name as mine, which is fun and confusing and all at the same time. And she has undiagnosed PTSD of her own.
Absolutely.
Having been in, I think, a battle zone of her own throughout her marriage to Arnold. And is doing her best. And I think in her way, just thriving. She is doing great.
Right. Now, and that was going to be my next question. On the surface, there's all these timely topics that come to mind, especially when you talk about trans politics, mental health, and PTSD, being a combat veteran. And so how would you say this play addresses those topics? Is it something, I mean, this is a comedy, right?
It is. Yeah, how I keep describing it is like it's hilarious until it's not.
And then it's really, really not.
And then it's really, really not hilarious. It deals with them in a real honest way. I think it raises questions, it presents information, and then it's up to the audience to sift through that very loaded, you know, content and find meaning for themselves, because it does not answer these questions, because these are questions that are not answered in our culture. Mm-hmm. You know, isolation and loneliness of like a trans kid is not going to be easily answered and fixed in 2 hours. We're not going to end domestic abuse in a 2-hour show. You know, we're not going to treat our war veterans better in 2 hours. But it makes, I hope, the audience aware of these things, and they will go out, have a discussion with their friends and family, and treat people better. I mean, that's the sort of thing, is like when you see this sort of devastation, my hope is that it goes out and tries to make you a little bit of a better person. It makes you a little more aware of what is happening. And then we all are connected. We're all in this mess together. And I hope that people go out and try to make the world a slightly better place than before they saw the show.
Something that this play really did for me, and that I also hope that it does for the audience, is highlights the fact that often we think of any group of people that we may not be a part of as the other, whether it's people with PTSD or veterans. So maybe I'm not a veteran, so I think of veterans as somebody else. Mm-hmm. And what one of the beautiful functions of this play, and something that it does really well, is highlight for the audience that these are our friends, these are our neighbors, these are our family members, whether we know it right now or not. Mm-hmm. This isn't about somebody else. And it makes us, I think, responsible for addressing things that we could maybe all too easily shove off, push away, and think of, oh, that's somebody else, and that's somebody else's problem. But it's not. It's mm-hmm. it's us.
There's a mild implication in some of the dialogue that the neighborhood kind of knew some of the abuse that was going on in this home, or like kind of like the neighborhood knew the kind of people that, and the kind of dysfunction that was happening here, and have just turned a blind eye to it. And I feel like that's every neighborhood. We all mm-hmm. know. We all yeah. grow. Mm-hmm. I found myself thinking back, like my own history, like, you know, oh, there was always that one kid whose parents did this, or like, you know, or like if I knew something was happening and no one says anything. Mm-hmm. So it's made me much more aware of what could be if you say something, what could be if you reach out. Like it's made me a little more keenly aware of mm-hmm. not just noticing it, but actually doing something about it.
Yeah. The play, I think, for me, is as much about the American landscape as it is about family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the family is a big metaphor for perhaps how Taylor Mack sees the country, you know, mm-hmm. this, like, crippled patriarchy on its way out, and this matriarchy with this burgeoning power coming over, and how are they going to deal with that? And then the youth is this, like, the wild queer being that just wants to be have its own truth. And then, you know, how does the military fit into that, because that is still unfortunately a necessary part of our society, and how does that function in this mm-hmm. unit?
Well, and also too, like the idea of that masculinity, which has a function in mm-hmm. society, being demonized mm. when, like, you know, Isaac's character is not necessarily like a bad guy. There's a great line of dialogue where it's like, you know, the world is made for people like you, and you fit in everywhere, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, if you say so, you know. Yeah. And I always think that's a really poignant.
Oh yeah.
Line, because I have a lot of friends and family in the military, and it's tough to come back and be so, like, it's a very hostile world to come back to. So you go away from a loving home to war, and come back to a place that you don't belong anymore.
Yeah,
I'm ex-military. It's funny to hear you talk about your character, because I remember when I was serving in Saudi Arabia, we had a pilot that overshot the runway and he crashed into the ground. Wow. And then they have what they call a FOD walk for foreign object damage, and they have the troops get, so you get side by side and you walk one at a time through this area, and basically what you're looking for are parts. You're looking for
playing parts, you're looking for body parts, you're looking for whatever you can find. I personally have PTSD with some of the stuff that I've dealt with going to Saudi Arabia. And it's interesting to talk about this because when you talk about race dynamics, gender dynamics, misogyny, you never really know what a person's barriers are. Mm. And I think it's awesome that this play really touches on that. Where are we at? So, well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm James Dixon, and joining us today are Andrew Klaus Vineyard, director for Here at Defunct Theater, and cast members Jim Vidala and Paige McKinney. So we're missing two other cast members. Can you tell us about the other characters in the show?
Sure, yeah. The father figure in the play is Arnold, played by the wonderful Tony Green.
I love Tony.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Arnold was the father of the family. He was abusive to the family, and he has had a stroke. Mm. And is now, he's monosyllabic most of the time, and he's also perhaps not being cared for in the way that somebody should be cared for.
Perhaps. Paige, the character Paige, thinks that he's being cared for exactly how he deserves to be cared for.
The other character is Max, played by Ruth Nardakia. Ah, so close.
I told you to set you up for that.
Max is a trans masculine youth of the age of 17.
Super bright. Yeah. Almost like too smart for their own good.
It's like the shaman of the play.
Yeah, totally. It's totally that character. Sort of wise beyond their years, but also immature in a very like real 17-year-old isolated sort of way. Weirdly, the character I related to, like at different times I would relate to different characters, but that one I was always like, yeah, it sucks being in like a small isolated place. And
I think that's on purpose. I don't, because I too identify very strongly with Max.
Yeah.
In other ways, but I think Taylor Mack designs that on purpose to have us identify with this character because so many Americans don't.
Don't. Yeah.
What's the setting? What's it? What town? Is there a town or a city, or is there not?
So we've kind of triangulated the location. It's North Central California.
Right.
It's like the Inland Empire area. And how we triangulated where it's at is they drive to the city to go to the museum, and it's like three hours there. Mm-hmm. And then at one point they talk about Wolf Creek, the Radical Ferry compound.
Right.
And they say it's 5 hours away. And so we were literally like, okay, where are we? Where are we? Like trying to figure out.
So, that's actually really good.
So that's why I said we have what cities are within 5 hours away from Wolf Creek and then 3 hours from a major city. So we're in the desert outside of like Sacramento, San Francisco area.
Grants Pass or Redding or something
like that. It's in California, so it is further down, but yeah.
Okay, so I've seen several shows at Defunct and happen to be a proud subscriber.
Yeah.
And I have always been fascinated with your scenic designs, considering the size of your space. Could you tell us about the set?
Laura Klingemann has outdone herself with this particular set.
Amazing.
It is a really... Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen pictures of the set or seen the show yet, it is a kitchen and living room. It's just a tract home suburbia that is completely destroyed from at least a full year of neglect. It's probably a good, 20 years of not really keeping it up and a full year of just letting it go. We don't do cupboards anymore. We don't take out the trash anymore.
We don't do laundry anymore.
We don't do laundry. So it is completely strewn with trash and laundry and damage. Laura is really outstanding, has done a great job with that set. And we had a discussion really early on. Someone wrote an article, a college student in New York who saw the original production. Mm. And said they wish there had been a trigger warning for the show. And Taylor Mack had a Facebook post about trigger warnings and how the show itself doesn't really, basically theater is for catharsis, not coddling.
Mm-hmm.
It's about exercising our demons, and that the set itself is your trigger warning. Sort of nothing good happened there, nothing good is going to happen there. that's your cue. And so that was sort of the jumping off point for the set, was like, it needs to, although we've sort of, I sort of love the set. Like, I find all these quirky, weird things about it that I find charming and love. Like, we've really made it our own.
We sure have.
It's going to drive me insane. I will literally sit there and just look at every little piece. I'm like, well, why? Because, well, I mean, why is it there? It's there for a reason, right? Everything's there for a reason.
It took our we have a wonderful stage manager, Jake Turner. It took him a little bit to be able to deal with the pure like filth and the chaos of it, because he's just very like, I need to clean this up.
Is he your PA as well, as he makes sure everything?
He sort of organizes the there's a great intermission, like halftime show is what I've been calling it. People sit and watch it. People totally just sit and watch it happen. There's a magical thing that happens at intermission.
Yeah, when you did Blast It, that was pretty impressive. Like,
I still feel like I'm going to find like blood and debris on me from Blast It. I would go home like hours later. I would shower and get out and be like, oh my God, I have blood on me. Oh, okay, I'm fine. It's fake.
So are there post-show discussions? What's the audience response? How's it been so far with the audiences?
We have had one, and then the next one is going to be on Saturday. So I advise people to get tickets to that. Immediately,
and we'll talk about that in a bit. So, Andrew, tell us about your upcoming season at Defunct Theater. Your theater has become Defunct has become nationally recognized as being one of the top 15 theaters for queer theater, which I believe I read. Was that on Billboard?
Yeah,
that
was. I believe it was Out Magazine.
That's right. Maybe? And I can imagine still an uphill battle to build audiences. And for those that are unfamiliar with your mission statement, the work that you produce at Defunct, how would you introduce Defunct as a Portland-based theater company?
I always default to something that Sarah Armitage, our executive director, said. It was just like kind of like a perfect encapsulation of like what our mission is. We like to tell the stories that so rarely get told. We're not just a queer-focused theater. We tell stories about race, about gender, about sexuality, about class, which is something that frequently doesn't get talked about. Mm-hmm. It's about intersectionality with us. And it isn't just sort of the kind of theater we do because we want to be trendy and be all social justice warrior about it. It just is, you know, Sarah's day job is she's a school teacher. Matthew Kern, my co-artistic director, is a social worker. My degree is in cultural studies, like queer feminist and Marxist theory. We are people who like sort of this is our lives. Like, that's sort of our mission. And this season just sort of magically shifted out and how it shook out into being three shows that are extremely, or four shows technically this year, really intense shows about kind of where America is, where it was, and some of the dangers of where it's going. So we have Here, which deals with all the things that we've been talking about, gender and sexuality and PTSD and war veterans. And then we're doing, Sarah Armitage is directing a night of theater that's two plays sort of together, and is it's Trifles, which is a play that is a very kind of academically studied early turn of the last century play that doesn't get staged very often, but she has a really fascinating take on it, and is about domestic abuse and the way women are treated in the aftermath of domestic abuse by the system at large, by the police and by their friends and family. And it's a really interesting show. And then we're doing also Dutchman by Amiri Baraka, which is an incredibly intense show about race and perception. And
it's a really intense show. Yeah.
It's a really, really, really intense show.
I was like, oh my God.
It's so uncomfortable and so good. But it's all about that sort of racial profiling and preconceived notions about who a villain is and who a predator is. And I think in our current society, that is absolutely vital. I wish it wasn't. I wish it was a dated historical piece, but it's absolutely vital.
Oh yeah.
And then Paul Angelo is directing the spring show, which is That Pretty Pretty or the Rape Play by Sheila Callahan, which is sort of a dark, dark, dark. I hesitate calling it a dark comedy, but it's sure. I mean, it's a really dark rape revenge thriller in a way about women, these kind of feminist performance artists who are enacting revenge on the patriarchy in their own way.
And Paul's a great director, too. He would tackle that pretty well.
It's like right up his alley.
He loves,
he likes the stuff that makes you really uncomfortable. He's also, I have to say, for someone who does things like the Rape Play or Blasted, he also did Let a Hundred Flowers Bloom, which was like this really sweet love story. So he's really good at balancing those things. So
that was the first show I saw at Defunct. Where can we find ticket information for here?
It is at defuncttheater.com, and you can always find us on Facebook as well. And there's links everywhere there. So I would highly recommend people get tickets. Space is limited. Mm-hmm. The theater currently seats 45 for this show. So space is very, very limited. So I advise people to buy tickets, or if you are planning to come, like, shoot us an email, make sure there's seats. We would love to have everyone see this show.
So, I mean, you brought up a topic. I just want to segue for a bit. You brought up something in talking about your upcoming season that's really struck something for me. So people are always talking about diversity in the arts, and people are always talking about what that means. In my personal opinion, I feel that's always a discussion about black versus white, but diversity, I mean, you mentioned the word intersectionality, and a lot of your work approaches this. Like, how do you, for all three of you, how do you feel about not just the work that you're doing, but as artists, as producers, as administrators, like, how do you feel about that topic?
I mean, for me, I have no choice but to have to deal with it. I mean, I grew up queer, Jewish, and biracial in the South. Oof. So I only know how to be other. Like, there aren't a lot of like Inuit Jews. Like, so like, I don't have any like community. So I am always other. Mm-hmm. So I sort of approach the world as, you should pay attention to people. Everybody's story is unique. Everybody's story is made up of all sorts of events that lead them there. No, I don't believe in, like, I hate people who are what I call single issue voters. Mm-hmm. People who are only interested in one facet of themselves or of others. They only want one version of a story told.
Right.
That's not the way the world works. Mm-hmm. That just isn't. And I think that's why it's important to us. Yes, race is a very big issue in this country, but socioeconomic status plays into that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, racism in this country is also compounded by classism. Mm-hmm. And then there's the sexism issue on top of that. So, like, you have to look at systemically all of these issues, but rather than picking apart one thing, because what happens is you get caught up on microaggressions and you just lose the big picture.
Oh my God, microaggressions. Those don't happen in Portland at all.
What? No. We're perfect here.
Yeah. Paige and Jim, do you have anything you want to add for that? Or
I feel the more that I have the opportunity to work in theater, especially working on really meaty plays like here that you can dive so deep into, and they're absolutely bottomless. We still haven't found, you know, even half of what's really in there, at least that I feel that as an actor. The more I get to make connections between one art project to another, to what I'm seeing when I go to the theater, to what's happening in the news. This is a very fraught and I think tense time in this country the last 6 to 8 months. Am I putting it mildly? And as humans, we want to make those connections. We really want to. And it's great to have the opportunities, both as an artist and as an audience member, to go out and see all of these wonderful things that are happening. And you just, without even trying, start to make those connections with your own experience and with what's happening with everybody else. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, I think as an artist and as an audience member, I just I pursue finding the voice for the voiceless and seek out things that make me question my world belief and things that make me uncomfortable. That's what entertains me ultimately. And that's why I was drawn to the play. That's why I was drawn to Defunct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people just really don't understand what we do, especially as actors. Like, we're not really mimicking things or pretending. Like, there's certain roles that you can't help but bring yourself into the room when you bring your personal energy in. You take it home with you.
Yes.
Whether you are the person that you're portraying, I mean, where does it take you mentally to really understand the depth of that character and really translating that to an audience? Like, the limits of that are like insane, and it's amazing. You know, we don't get paid a lot of money to do this type of work, but that's not why we do the work, is it? Okay, so once again, you're listening to Stage and Studio, and we have been talking to Andrew Klaus Vineyard, director and cast members Jim Badal and Paige McKinney with Here being produced at Defunct Theater. Defunct is located at 4319 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, and the show runs through November 12th. For ticket information, visit their website at www.defuncttheater.com. So, Andrew, Jim, and Paige, any shameless self-promotion? Do you have any upcoming projects that you want to talk about or share?
December 9th, I think, you can come check out myself in La Belle at Imago Theater.
Nice.
Yeah.
How about you, Paige?
I'm an associate artist with Portland Experimental Theater Ensemble, and they have a show, which I'm not in, but it's going to be an amazing show nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Shocking. in mid-November, and their website is petensemble.org.
After this, I'm going back home to Seattle, where I now live, and I'm working on a new film project and some photography work, so you can check that stuff out at timeoutfilms.com.
So we've got a little bit of extra time. Do you guys want to tackle any other topics with Defunct or any things you forgot to mention about the show?
Well, what I've been thinking about this whole time is that Taylor Mack has this lovely quote that when Taylor writes a play, Taylor sits down and writes down all the things that make Taylor uncomfortable. And that turns into a play.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
There was, I wish I had taken a screenshot of it on Facebook today. Taylor, I mean, just a few minutes ago, posted this thing that was that you don't need to gatekeep yourself for access to creativity and to create work. Like, you don't need other people's permission to participate in that process. Like, that is okay for you to do. And I think that's a really interesting, I think we frequently hold ourselves back from participating in things or exploring sides of ourselves or interests because we worry about what other people will think, or, you know, maybe I'm not good enough, or maybe, you know, this isn't I'm not the kind of person who gets to do those things. And I think we miss out on a lot of great culture being created and curated because we think these gatekeepers are the only people who are the right people to tell the story. And I think everybody has a story worth telling. I think
It's interesting you say that. Probably one of the biggest, I mean, I'll be personal, the biggest hurdles becoming an actor is just like feeling like you're not good enough. And it's not about whether you're good enough. It's, I mean, do you want what I want? Do you want what I got? Mm-hmm. Am I the right fit? You know, really taking what you bring to the table and just putting it out there and saying, this is what I have. Can I develop it further? Do you, you know, this is my 10 butt trick, or do you like it?
I think that's an interesting thing. Like, this particular industry in theater and in film, frequently it all boils down to like someone's aesthetic taste of like, do you fit a body type or a look that I want? And I think that's a really dangerous, slippery slope of treating human beings as just commodities. I mean, it happens every day, and we are a commodity in some way. And I think what I love about Defunct is we really want the right person to tell the story, and it isn't about race or gender or any sort of thing like that. It's, are you going to, well, honestly, are you going to be professional? Are you going to show up and do your job? Mm-hmm. Are you going to get along with everyone? And can you tell this story? Mm-hmm. And I always really respect actors who like read the script, come and audition, and then read it again, and they're like, I think this is too much for me. This show might be too much. And I respect the heck out of that, because it's sometimes the work we do is tough. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of really heavy work. I mean, we did Blasted, which was death and murder and rape and, a cannibalizing a baby. But, you know, here is the show that got to me. We all have our limits. We all have our things that this got under my skin, because it's about, you know, family and America and about all the things that make me uncomfortable and that I care about. And it gets to you.
So once again, we've been talking to Andrew Klaus-Vineyard, director for Here at Defunct Theater, and cast members Jim Vidala and Paige McKinney. Thank you for joining us today, Break a Leg. If you've missed any of this interview, you can listen online later today at kboo.fm/stageandstudio. You can also get post events or get previews by joining our Facebook page. And that's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. Till next week, I'm James Dixon with Stage and Studio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming, you guys. Thanks so much. Thank you.
You are tuned to KBOO Community Radio. Coming up on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews Sean Healy about his new show, Gut, which runs at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery from November 3rd to December 30th.
My name is Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sean Healy. His show, Gut, is opening on November the 3rd and runs through November. His show, Gut, opens November the 3rd and runs through December the 30th at Elizabeth Leach Gallery in the Pearl. Thanks for coming into KBOO,
Sean. Thanks for having me.
So, Sean, you've been with Liz Leach for 8 solo shows now, which is a long